there's this thing called the illusory truth effect. And the basic idea is that the more times you hear something or maybe experience it, the more likely you are to believe that it's true. Not because you've evaluated it or tested it, but simply because it feels familiar. I guess there was a 1977 study at Villanova and Temple Universities that found that when assessing new information, people tend to rely on whether information aligns with their understanding and if it feels familiar. So in this sense, repetition can make information easier to process, leading people to believe a repeated conclusion is more truthful, even if it hasn't yet been fully evaluated or factually confirmed. And what makes it even worse is that in a 2015 study found that familiarity can actually overpower rationality. And paradoxically, repeatedly hearing a certain statement is wrong can actually cause it to feel right, which is a little scary because researchers observed that illusory truth effects impact applied even to participants who knew the correct answer to begin with, but were persuaded to believe otherwise through the repetition of a falsehood due to processing fluency. Now, if we think about how that applies to fields like advertising, news media, political propaganda, and religious indoctrination, that can be pretty scary. When I first learned all of this, I admit I cringed, given that so many of us exist in a bubble of largely like-minded people. So I had to worry, how many wrong things do I believe simply because they seem right or because I've heard them so often? Because the narrative is maybe familiar. So repetition takes things and makes them easier for us to process. And our brains, efficient as they are, tend to treat ease as a signal for truth. If that's right. Familiar... if it comes to mind quickly, if it feels fluent, it must be right. Except that's not always the case, as we can tell. And so that can get us into trouble. So if we're operating in an environment where we're seeing the same patterns over and over again, the same narratives, the same assumptions, the same interpretations, those may start to feel true just because they're familiar. So when we say maybe experience builds that intuition, we have to be careful, right? Because experience unchecked can easily reinforce the wrong patterns more than the right ones. So that goes back to why training matters and why training methods that are tried and true, that are tested over time, and that experts are able to validate, I think helps a great deal. So that training doesn't just expose you to patterns, it forces you to test them and break them and challenge them and see where they hold up and learn from mistakes. And it's the difference between I've seen this before, so I know what it is, and I've seen this before, and I've verified what it actually means. And I think that separates maybe informed intuition from ingrained bias. What do you think about that?
I think that's spot on. One of the lessons that I learned from running the farm was that I didn't decide who comes to this course, and I didn't decide where they went afterwards. My only job was, do they meet expectations as outlined over decades? And as assessed by people with hundreds of years of operational experience. And so biases can be learned. We all have them. And having them is not the problem. Not acknowledging them is the problem. And so when I'm at the schoolhouse and I just have a one sheet of the, you know, here's the 100 students that are coming in. This many have PhDs. This many have master's degrees. There's these list of languages spoke amongst these 100 kids. And I'm talking about 100 different languages. It is mind-boggling, but every one of them knows absolutely nothing about the CIA before they join. And that's by design, because what you have to do is separate. Oh yeah, you were a straight A student. That's fantastic. That ain't going to mean anything when you're on a dark corner in the middle of some place where you're not familiar with your surroundings. And if you're not familiar with your surroundings, that's on you, because we teach you and train you to be familiar with these surroundings. Shameless plug aside, there's a Hulu series that I'm featured in one of the 8 episodes, in which that very real on the ground knowledge helped us escape a very scary situation in which our team could have easily gotten shot up. So we knew the routes. I knew all the ways in, I knew all the ways out. And guess what? The road, as you viewed it 5 days ago, they just put up a makeshift wall right there. Guess what? Now it's a dead end. And are you stuck? Can you get around it? Where's the alternative? And you don't have time to be looking at a map and trying to figure out that stuff on the fly, which is why you train, which is why you practice, which is why you sit down in a safe room in your home and talk about, okay, if we get to point A and it doesn't go the way we you know, what's our next move? So there's very few scenarios that's thrown at us in the field that we don't have at least have thought about. Every now and then, there's some things you just can never predict. But for the most part, because you probably know the environment better than most people, even some of the natives that live there, because you're looking at it from a very, very different security and safety perspective, and not, you know, is this a shortcut to the market where I can grab water or whatever? And it might be that, but the bottom line is, you know why cats have those whiskers on their face? Because the width of their whiskers is how their body can turn around. So those are like little radar indications and warning. I could put my head in here, but if I put my whole body in here, I'm not going to be able to get out. That's us. We're always that curious cat. If I stick my head in this, what's going on over there? Am I going to get it shot off, or am I going to stop from someone else from getting their head shot off? Well, the only way to do that is to stick your head in there and hope that all your training and all your approach to, you know, how you stick your head out matters. The learning becomes so second nature and such a part of you that I couldn't drive by a street without thinking, ooh, that'd be a great brush pass site, or that'd be a great place for a brief encounter, or that's tucked away enough that I could probably have a developmental meeting there, whatever it happens to be. Nothing is the same anymore. You never see the world the same anymore. People ask me what I look for when I walk into a room, and everybody sits with their back to the wall and they always know where the exits are. Like, yeah, that, I mean, you should know that before you walk in the room, first of all, and not the door you entered. That one doesn't count. You know where that door is and you know where it led from. Where's that other door go to? Well, I don't know what's behind it. Now, do you go push a door that has, you know, alarm will sound, you go through there? No. But if somebody's shooting, would you? You better. You don't care about an alarm going off. Oh, if I pull this alarm, everybody's going to be mad at me because the sprinkler systems are going to come on. Well, those sprinkler systems could discombobulate, you know, the attackers just enough for someone to save a life. You're going to do things that just make sense at the time, in the moment to do it. And then you live to breathe, live to fight another day. Anyway, I know, you know, my degree is in psychology, and my minor, if I was able to declare it at the time, would have been either in religion or in criminal justice. And I'm like, so religion, law enforcement, and picking into people's brains. I'm like, yeah, that's what interests me. People are so interesting to me. Even people who think they have boring lives have no idea that their lives could mean something to someone. Every one of us has got a story. Every one of us has got a situation, a scenario that's going to help someone learn from it. And identifying what those are and passing that, you know, paying it forward, paying that knowledge forward to whoever it is. We used to play games with the kids, spot the diplomatic plates, and you would find the North Koreans and the Russians and the Chinese, and you'd play I Spy. Okay, kids, if you see a 55 car, remember the time of day and where it was. So they would come back at the end of the week and I, Papa, look, I saw a 55 car here on this day and there. And guess what? I just turned these little kids playing a game into me tracking basically life patterns of the people that I'm interested in. I don't know who's driving that particular car. I can figure that one out later, but I know he went to the grocery store on this Tuesday at this time, and we're creatures of habit. Eventually, I can probably figure that out. So I taught my kids to be self-aware. If they're walking by someone, first thing you look from the shoes up, not from the head down, because you can switch the top out, but very few people switch out their shoes. And if you know what the shoes look like, then you'll know what to look for the next time. Keep distance between you and a person. If they are close enough to touch you, they're close enough to hurt you. And if they step forward and you step back and they keep stepping forward, that's a sign. They do not mean you goodwill. They probably mean you harm. And all these little things, and you try not to freak kids out that the whole world's out to get them, but most people are in scenarios and situations because they didn't recognize quickly enough the threat that this person posed. Ted Bundy, by all measures, was a charming dude, handsome, an attorney, and evil as evil exists. And I can't imagine the people who had to experience him when he was in his true self. But guess what? He was a smiling, good-looking guy. And people think that is friendly. Well, it could be, or it could be a facade. Serial killers is one of my things that I studied growing up. Wayne Williams, Atlanta child serial killer. was just coming to story when I ended high school in 82 and started college. The Green River Killer, all these serial killers were out there. And people were like, oh, they're doing terrible things. I said, but why? If you understand why, and I'm a certified coach, and they say even to begin to get to anywhere close, you have to ask why three times at a minimum. Why? And most people are never going to give you the full why the first time. You got to continue to dig and build trust as you're going along. And so that helps with biases. That helps with misreading a situation or overconfidence, because what you're doing is you're thinking methodically and you're learning how that person thinks that way, or maybe even why they think that way. And if you have that, the why will always lead you to the who. Almost always. Law enforcement, intelligence, maybe not in genetics, but it's very important to ask why. Why is probably my favorite word on the planet. And I tell people, I'm like the third grader, because I'm going to be asking why over and over again. And they, sometimes they just look at me like, man, that was like seven whys in a row. I said, yeah, but if I had stopped at the first one, what would I not have learned? And they usually sit back and say, okay, I see your point. The five W's. And maybe this is a way for people to train themselves, because you can train yourself to listen. You can train yourself to be a better receiver of information, but it's learned and it's practiced and it's executed either successfully or as a learning situation, a challenge that next time I won't make the same mistake. I'm a huge proponent of training, and people need to grasp that adults and children learn very differently. Adult learners, you have to hear something they say seven times before it sticks. You have to hear it repeatedly before it sticks. But as you mentioned, seven things that are all wrongs told the same way is just as powerful as well. But if you keep asking why, one side is going to fall apart and the other isn't. It's always the ones who are not true to themselves, not true to the facts, the realities, that they don't want you to ask questions. They just want you to accept. Well, that ain't working for me. Didn't work for me as a kid, and it doesn't work for me as an adult. I need to understand why. And if I can't understand why you're doing something, then I'm never going to understand how to stop you from doing that something.
For sure. And I kind of was laughing as you were talking about the why, because I know you have definitely asked me why a million times over. And I love it. I know what you're doing, but you're helping me to kind of dig into my own thinking and my interests and why I believe something to be true, or why I might want to do something, or those kinds of things. And so it's so powerful. And I think, like you said, it kind of goes back to evaluating why we teach things the way we teach them, mm-hmm. you know, trying to understand what is the why behind this? Why is this effective? Why should this work? You know, and really digging into those questions, because a lot of times, both in leadership and in intelligence, we don't always rise to the moment. We hope we will, we think we will, we like the idea that we will, but we often fall back on the systems that we've built, right? And we have to have built good systems for how we think and how we evaluate situations. The better those systems are, the more our instincts become something we can rely on, right? When we've stress tested them, when we've asked the whys, when we've really dug into that and understood. And so, yeah, there are going to be times when we're relying on quote unquote instinct. But the real question, I think, is what kind of instinct are we relying right. on? Has it been yeah. examined? Is it just reactive? Is it built on assumptions that maybe we haven't tested? Or is it something that we've refined through experience and training and reflection and discipline?
Yep, all of the above. That's the one thing. So people who want to get into the intelligence community, see me on ABC News or see that I've come out from undercover and I actually talk about this stuff. So I get requests from all over the world about, hey, I want to join my service. And not just Americans wanting to join CIA, but people joining other services. And I say, well, you have to ask yourself why you want to do this, why you chose this path. And you need to understand that whatever movies, books, or TV shows that you've read are a snapshot in time. Literally, that operation might have lasted an hour or two, not to count the hundreds of hours that went into planning for that hour or two. That's not the sexy stuff. Sexy stuff is what you can read about or what you can depict, you know, in a moving situation on a television show or a film. But there's so much that went into that that I don't think people understand that it isn't just experience. It is expertise. So fast, intuitive thinking based on, as you call it, the scaffolding that has been interrogated, tested, and trained. You're not trying to eliminate how you do these things. You're just allowing the circumstances, the experiences, what is happening right now to just kind of wash over you so that you can make good, informed approaches, so to speak. We call them cold pitches at the CIA. You go out to cold pitch someone. There's no history there with that person other than what you've collected against them, what you know about them, and you're catching them unawares. You're literally throwing CIA at them in a bar, in their comfort zone, in a place, and it's unnerving. I've had to do 3 or 4 of those in my career. Not a single one of them worked because it's so shocking when someone throws those 3 letters out there. You know, they trained us not to say Central Intelligence Agency or CIA. I don't think I ever said those words in 28 years. Well, that's not true. I had domestic tours where I had to, but it's just something we don't think about that because that espionage is illegal in every country on the planet. So just by virtue of the fact that you're there as a part of an espionage entity means somebody's going to be coming after you. You're a target as well. Building the framework, the context, the mental models, all those things are more than just a feeling. And emotion is a part of it. Feeling is a part of it. But it can't override logic, reason, and empathy because those are the ones on the human side, the human intelligence side, on the leadership side, that are important because they say that 80% of all communication is nonverbal. So if you're only listening and hearing things, you're only hearing 20% of what's going on around you. Think about that. That's kind of scary, which means you're gathering a lot of information, but you're missing 4 times as much as if you allowed your senses, the smells, just anything that's around you, they all have a role. One quick story. Dakar, Senegal, mid to late 90s, and we were hosting a regional advanced assessment course. So we had probably 5 or 6 case officers, all unilateral, meaning they weren't declared to their particular government, all traveled to Senegal in a 1-week course with one of our operational psychologists. And what she offered was, if any of you all have real world cases, share them with me before I get out there and I can sit down with you and tell you your chances of recruiting this person or whether you're wasting your time. So anyway, we get to my scenario and I was lucky enough to be able to invite her to a dinner where she could be in the same room physically as this target. And 3.5 hours later, I'm all excited. Asset has left the house. He's gone. And I'm like, I don't want to wait till tomorrow to get the feedback for what this is. First thing she said is, don't waste your time. Like, what do you mean don't waste my time? I've been working this for the last 6 months. I got this intel out of him. I got this. He's like, he's not ready. I'm like, how do you discern that? And then she pulled out her little pad with numbers and sequencings and letters. And I didn't understand any of it. But she said things that I had never written up about this person's character. She said things about this guy that I don't know how on earth she was able to glean them and ascertain this with such specificity that, I mean, she was almost like being like a witch. She was like witchcraft. I'm like, this is crazy. But she was right. And the thing was, my spouse at the time had told me pretty much the same thing about 4 months earlier. And I'm like, of course I'm going to recruit this guy. Don't you know what my name is? Of course I'm going to recruit him. You know, I got that ego get in the way. Instead of trusting the instincts, not trained, she didn't go through the farm, but she had been around me in enough scenarios and situations to recognize that this is not going to turn out the way you thought it was going to turn out. And if I had just listened back then to her intuition, again, not trained, not taught, not built up, other than being a woman on this planet where you guys have to always be self-aware and know where you are and identify threats before they actually become threats and all those other kind of things. So I think it's innate in women. And I when I was at the farm, everybody was like, oh, you're going to have an EEO complaint filed against you. You can't tell the guys that women are smarter than them and they're better case officers. I say, well, actually, I can, because I have the empirical data that proves it. And I laid it all out going back close to 30 years that women are just naturally more attuned to what's happening or not happening, whether it's verbalized or not, more so than men. And you can teach men to do that. And there are men that can do that. But as a generalization, no man has ever had to walk into a room and say, oh my God, I wonder why she's looking at me like that. No, that just doesn't happen. Women deal with that every single day from the time that they're like 10 years old until they're not. And it's just crazy. But yeah, you don't discount those things. You don't say, ah, yeah, that's not real. He's okay. He's safe. Well, until he isn't. So women come to our program with that and then are taught other things that just make, they become even more hyper aware of things that are around them in a way that the chances of putting themselves in a situation after they've been through this training and after they've lived the lives that they live are so much less than men who just walk into a room and think they own it by virtue of the fact that they were anatomically different than the women. I think that's one of the failures of our program, is not reinforcing the fact that these traits, and by these traits, I mean a natural self-awareness, a natural curiosity. Every one of us has been in a relationship or had someone in a relationship where they had a baby and the wife or the girlfriend says, oh, so tell me about Susie. Like, oh yeah, she's healthy and the baby's healthy. Well, is it a boy or a girl? Oh, it's a girl. Well, what's her name? How much did she weigh? How long was she? You know, all these things that you wouldn't have to ask a woman that. She would just tell you. But a guy's like, well, she's safe. Mama's safe. Baby's safe. All good. Well, no, man. There are details there that matter. Like, who does she look like? You look more like the husband's side of the family. And you know what? Those are just things that women just naturally do. And quite frankly, multitasking. In the schoolhouse, of course, we give you more than you can handle. That's the whole purpose of it. That means you have to rack and stack and make decisions based on something's going to get done and something's not going to get done. And you just don't want the important thing to be in that pile of not getting done. So women are better at multitasking. Women are more curious, and women have an innate built into them through experiences over their lifetime of figuring out threats. You can teach some of those things, but most of those are learned, and women just learn them a whole lot earlier than men. And in a situation that began as real and then came to light to them through experiences at the farm. And I can't speak for a woman. I've never been one, never going to be one. But when I explain it to them, most times I get exactly what I'm seeing right now. When you nod in your head like, yep, that is so true. Women are just natural born case officers.
I mean, I
which
think
also,
it's,
which yep. also, hold on, don't get happy, nope. which also okay. means natural born manipulators. And I don't always see manipulation as only negative connotations, but at the end of the day, that is what we did. That is what we got trained to do. That's what we got paid to do. And if you did it really well, that's what you rose up through the ranks by creating a scenario, selling that scenario to whoever it is that you're trying to recruit, and then turning that into intelligence production, into recruitments, into surveillance, whatever it is that you're using that asset for. But at the end of the day, have you manipulated that person? Yes, you have. Absolutely, you have.
Well, you know, and it's funny because I've wrestled with that a little bit too, because, you know, manipulation has such a negative connotation and nobody really likes to be known as a manipulator, right? And so, exactly. You know, I've thought about that a lot, but you've said it earlier in the conversation about using your powers for good and not evil, right? And so if you're approaching something with ulterior motives, you know, are those ulterior motives positive or good or, mm-hmm. you know, benign, if you will, or, you know, that kind of thing. And so right. if you're doing something that you genuinely believe to be good and right, does that offset the use of manipulative tactics. Well, I guess the judgment is in the eye of the beholder on that one. It is. But yeah, it is a bit of a challenge. Well, it has been so, so wonderful having you, Daryl. I could sit and chat with you and listen to you tell stories all day long. Do you have any final thoughts or anything before we close?
I do. It took me a while to figure out the name of the podcast, Unknown Knowns, and I recall perfectly watching Donald Rumsfeld as Secretary of Defense stating this very famous quote, "There are known knowns. There are the things that we know. We also know there are known unknowns." That is to say, we know that there are some things we just don't know. But there are also unknown unknowns. The ones we don't know, we don't know. Now, at the time, every medium on the planet was just all over him for that comment, and it made perfect sense to me. But what he never said was unknown knowns. That was actually a Slovenian philosopher, Slavoj Zizek, and I'm sure I'm butchering his name, but he's the one that said there's actually a fourth pillar, the unknown knowns. And for me, that's it. I don't need to understand how I came to this. I just need to understand that I have seen or witnessed or been a party to so many different scenarios and so many situations that when I'm looking at it, I know that it's more than just the ability to make a judgment or decide quickly, but that it is based on substantial prior knowledge, experience, and expertise. So the one thing that I always tell people, if you want to silence the critics, you have to produce results. And producing results in the face of people who said, nah, this can't be done, or you don't know what you're doing, is probably one of the more rewarding feelings in the earth. Not, you know, I proved you wrong type of thing, but I didn't listen to the naysayers. I didn't allow these people to talk me out of what I inherently, innately, and implicitly knew to be the path that I should be pursuing in this. And I don't really consider myself an expert in anything, but for the purposes of my time on ABC News, I tell them I'm an expert in North Korea, Iran, and terrorist organizations, because that's what I did in every assignment that I ever lived in. It's the people that I feel most comfortable talking about, whether it's my military experience on the Korean Peninsula or my experiences on the African continent in Southwest Asia or Europe. At the end of the day, there's still so much that I don't know that calling myself an expert is just hard. But I do believe I'm an expert in human behavior. I do believe that I have honed my passion of puzzles and figuring stuff out, my absolute desire to fight for people who can't protect themselves, which takes me to the board that I sat on with Peace for Kids, basically emboldening and helping foster youth recognize that they're more than the circumstances that they were born into, or whether I'm chasing down people who are selling children either for sexual purposes or to work in sweatshops or whatever. So children, elderly, and people who can't protect themselves, I don't like bullies. So I tell people, become an expert, however you define that, know as much or more than whoever it is that you're talking to. If you don't know the answer to something, be the first person to say, you know what, I have no idea what the answer is, but by this time tomorrow, I'll have one. Or by the time I go to sleep tonight, I will have an informed decision, because results trumps everything. Results, the naysayers, the haters, when you produce, that's all businesses care about. That's all your family cares about. Were you there when you said you were going to be there? Did you deliver what you said you were going to deliver? Those are things that aren't inherent to or innate to men or women. It's just humankind. And yeah. Maslow's theory of the hierarchy of needs. No one wants to think that they can be boiled down to 6 or 7 categories, but we can. And whether it's Myers-Briggs and the 16 possibilities that you have, or Hogan's assessment, when you learn what truly drives someone, and that comes through asking why, that comes through informed intuition, that comes through searching the answers to those unknown knowns, then I'm never going to be satisfied with any answer. They say that art is never finished. It's only continued. It's only the beginning of whatever it is that that artist was trying to convey. I feel the same thing about intelligence work. There's far more policy failures than intelligence failures, and we've had a lot of them over the years. But it's easy to lump everything onto a community that doesn't defend itself, that does not say, hey, here's why we're right. Well, we don't need you to understand why we're right. We know we're right. And we could fight you in the, you know, in the press, or we could, you know, we could treat you the same way that you treat us. But at the end of the day, the truth can be ignored at your peril, but it's always going to bubble to the surface. The truth shall set ye free.
Hey, so. I mean, an adage is an adage because it's true. So,
exactly.
You know,
yep.
There you have it. Yep. Thank you so much. It has been absolutely wonderful having you on. Thank you for listening to The Unknown Knowns. If this episode made you think or rethink, share it with a colleague or friend who's ready to level up their intelligence tradecraft. Subscribe for more short, sharp conversations about the art and science of professional judgment. And until next time, stay curious, stay grounded, and keep turning intelligence into impact.